I'm glad you still are wanting to come at this late hour to the last session. So in this session, I'll be talking about workflow 4 and comparing it a little bit with workflow 3. And I'll actually be building a service live so you can see how it works, get a little bit of feeling about it. So I'm Peter Himschoot. I work as a consultant and trainer for U2U, a Belgium training company. Here's my agenda. I want to start with talking a little bit about workflows. By the way, by show of hands, who here has familiarity with workflow 3, for example, or any other workflow engine? Anybody with 4? Okay. Windows Communication Foundation. I don't want to talk about 4. I mean 3 or 4, whatever. Okay. Excellent. So I want to talk about the workflow way. I want to build a service with workflow because actually now I can build a WCF service with workflow without writing a single line of code. Then you might wonder, why would I want to do that? No. Then I'm also going to talk a little bit about content-based correlation because that's very important for workflows and also for services, by the way. And then I'm going to end up with App Fabric, also known as Project Dublin. Anybody ever hear about Project Dublin? Okay, cool. So, what does it mean to be using a workflow? What's so bad about writing code? Well, nothing's bad about writing code, but we also have the workflow way of building code. In that, we're actually going to use little building blocks called activities to build together a workflow. Now, because this is highly declarative, you can also easily visualize that, and you can, of course, understand it makes it easier to visualize whatever you're building to a non-developer, because they get pretty pictures. So, for example, in this one, both of them do almost the same thing. They wait for something, then they do stuff. They send a response, they wait for more stuff, they do stuff, and they send back more response. That's, by the way, another very important side aspect of using Workflow Foundation. You use it to build code that must wait a lot, and it must wait a long time. Now, if you build code yourself that has to wait a long time, what could happen? Windows update, restarting your machine. So if your code is still in memory, you will actually have to make sure that when the machine reboots, that whatever your code was doing can just continue doing. Can you imagine that? It's not so easy. Actually, workflow does that for us too. So, because we have these activities, which are really building blocks, workflow can actually do even more for us. Actually, the basic thing that workflow will do is it will schedule these building blocks. It will really say, I want you to first receive a message. Okay, done? Okay, next thing, I want you to do this if. You want me to schedule this thing now? Okay, I'll schedule it, execute that thing. Now, in between each step, what workflow can do for you, it can do a lot more, like save stuff to disk, do tracking, write stuff to logging files so you can prove that whatever you were doing was correct, and so on. And that's another important side aspect. Have you ever tried doing something like that in your own code? Well, it would mean that you would have to change your code. In workflow, because we have these little building blocks, between each block we can insert anything we want automatically. Also very important is the persistence we get. So when a workflow activity has done, what we can say is, save me to disk. Or when the workflow sees that your activity is going to wait, you can tell it, save me to disk. By the way, anybody here who has ever written a workflow 3 activity that would have to be asynchronous, that would wait? Nobody? Oh, okay. Was that easy? Show of hand, if you mean yes. Okay, a lot of people do not find that easy. Dependency properties, do you find that easy? No, I see no show of hands. Maybe some of the lights are shining too much in my eyes. But actually, workflow 3 made that kind of difficult. Workflow 4 makes that a lot easier. I'm sorry, I won't be able to talk about those aspects in any detail, but I can assure you. So, what if you have a workflow that needs to persist? Well, actually, it means that whenever we're going to wait, we can save stuff to disk, and then when whatever we're waiting for arrives, we can just continue with that. This also has a nice side effect. What if, in between, one of the machines is too busy? What you can then do is to offload your part of your workflow that hasn't been executed yet to another machine. Why? That's easy. The first bit saves stuff to disk. The second bit can actually be loaded on another machine and then simply continue. Imagine writing code like that. Writing simply a console read line, give me your name, console write line, hello, name. In such a way that I can kill the application at any time. If I restart the application, it continues where it left off, and I can actually restart it on another machine. Imagine writing a simple application like that yourself. Again, workflow does that for you. Okay. There are a lot of people here already familiar with workflow, so let's go a little bit further. Actually, workflow 3, when we first saw it, there was no integration yet with Windows Communication Foundation, right? But then in Service Pack 1, Microsoft gave us integration with WCF. Actually, the team that was building workflow was doing that at the same time as the team that was doing WCF, so they couldn't use each other's stuff yet. It wasn't ready yet. So in Service Pack 1, they started using, WCF for exposing services. Again, show of hands, who here has built a Workflow 3 application that needed to talk to the outside world using the external data exchange way of technique and found that easy? Okay, what just happened was like this. Everybody raised their hand and then dropped it immediately. It was kind of weird. Now, if you do this with WCF in Workflow 3, if I need to build a Workflow 3 thing, I will automatically use it as WCF. It's way more easy. It actually is a marriage made in heaven, WCF and Workflow. Problem was Workflow 3 didn't do that yet. So Workflow 4 actually takes up on that. So if you want to build a service, what you can simply do is you can drag a special activity call receive and drop another activity call send and build a service that way. And because it's declarative, you get all the other advantages. Anybody here has ever built a durable WCF service? Yeah? Oh, cool. A couple of people. Yesterday I was in the Netherlands and nobody raised their hand. So it's really cool to have a WCF service like that. What it means is your service can actually survive if the server restarts for some reason. If IIS does a reset for some reason. Why? A WCF service that's durable will also save stuff to disk. Now that's part of workflow. Actually, WCF 3 use that from workflow. WCF 4 actually can do that, but that's for tomorrow. Okay. So what was actually wrong with workflow 3? Well, when I talk about workflow 3, I show them the code activity. And I say, this is useful for one thing, the code activity. Demos. Please do not put any coder in a code activity. Okay, but again, by show of hands, and please be honest, who here has been putting their code in code activities? Okay, a couple of people. Why is it so bad? Well, it makes it a lot more harder to change that code, right? And actually, one of the cool things we had in workflow was XAML workflows. Now, if you have a XAML workflow, things drastically change. If you want to build a new version of that workflow, how do you update a new version of an assembly? Well, you might need to copy it to the GAC and so on and so on. How do you update a new version of a string? Easy, right? If I can build a service that actually accepts a XAML string, I can build a service that can execute any workflow as long as I'm not using any custom code in there. And that actually was basically the idea in Workflow 3, but almost nobody is doing that. Anybody here is doing that? I don't see any show of hands, otherwise I would have been give you a little applause, because it's not easy to do. In Workflow 4, it's a lot easier to do. And another important thing they did with Workflow 4 is they said, okay, let's just take WCF, and let's imagine building services with WCF in the workflow way. So they just took workflow and WCF, and it's one thing. So the new WCF actually has one of its features, workflow. Okay, a couple of other things have been improved. Performance, way better. And no more, dependency properties. Why did I put promoter properties there? No more dependency properties. Nobody likes them. It's way easier to program with Workflow 4. So what does Workflow give us? It gives us a fully declarative programming environment. We're going to be using XAML. Don't worry, you will not have to type in XAML like a lot of people have been doing with WPF and Silverlight. You really get a good, nice designer to work with that. Actually, the code kind of way of building workflows has gone in workflow. If you want, you can still do it, but they made it kind of not so nice to do. There's no designer to start with. So basically, you're stuck to the XAML way of doing stuff. What they've also done is they've changed the model a bit. What they've seen a lot of people doing was building state charts as a kind of workflow, as a kind of flowchart. So in workflow 4, they added flowcharts as a native way of doing stuff. And as I'll show you, it's a great way for building services again. Because stuff comes in, stuff goes out, and then you wait for something, and then you have to take a decision. Stuff comes in, stuff goes out. That works quite nicely with flowcharts. So instead of having sequential workflows, the default model in workflow 3, or state machine workflows, now we will typically see flowchart models. Okay. By the way, for those of you who are wondering, will I have to do all the stuff I've been doing in workflow 3 again? No. Workflow 4 is completely backward compatible with workflow 3. So if you want to, you can still execute stuff from workflow 3. Again, there was another kind of strange thing that happened in workflow 4. They dropped the state machine workflows. Who here is using workflow 3 state machine workflows? You don't have to worry. Again, you can still use it, and they're going to retrofit the same model back into workflow 4. I haven't seen it yet, but Microsoft promised. So let's hope they do that. And even then, you can still perfectly build everything backward compatibility with backward compatibility. So how do you execute a workflow? Well, now because we have XAML, we can simply take a model, compile our XAML, hit run, and execute it. But we can do another thing. We can actually dynamically load XAML. Anybody ever tried to dynamically load XAML in workflow 3? No? Well, actually, again, if you're raising your hand and I don't react to you, that's because there are four heavy lights shining on me, and everybody in that path is really invisible to me, okay? But what happened in workflow 3? You could also use XAML, but you couldn't dynamically load that XAML. Why? Well, there was the class directive in the XAML, and that makes it very hard to dynamically load that into memory because it's a compile time thing. So what they did in workflow 4, they also created a new kind of way of dynamically loading XAML by using something called the dynamic activity. And that takes care of all the messy bit you would have to do before. So again, if you want to, you can build a service that simply loads XAML from a database, for example, and executes it. So you could imagine that you could have like 5 different customers, each customer with a different workflow for them. And then when you receive an order for that customer, load the XAML, execute the XAML. Versioning, same thing. You can just have multiple versions of that same workflow, all as strings. But enough about that. This is a little example of building a flowchart. I'll be doing one like that live. And as you can see, anybody ever needed, while they were maybe in school, have to draw flowcharts? Yeah? Actually, when I was starting to program, they said, you should draw a flowchart first and then code. Of course, I did the inverse. But this is really a flowchart, but it's great for modeling business stuff. Okay. By the way, why is it so important for modeling business stuff? So I've been going on and on about using workflow. What you also see in workflow 4 is they've added a couple of new things. Well, to be honest, most of this stuff you can do with workflow 3, but they have like persistence, they have like monitoring. So in persistence, you can make a workflow save to disk and then continue on another machine, or save to disk, restart the machine, continue the machine, and just make it execute. A little bit like BizTalk. But you can also add monitoring, what happened in my workflow. Again, if it's a long-running business workflow, which can take 5-6 months, and something went wrong, you definitely need monitoring to show, what to look at what happened. But what you also get is like a new way of working with workflows. We can start and stop workflows from within IIS. And that's actually where Dublin, or what's now called App Fabric, comes into the picture. By the way, anybody here not confused by the name App Fabric for the cloud and App Fabric for server? No, sorry, I meant not. Sorry, not. you're not confused, then I need to talk to you. So they have the same name, App Fabric, for two different things. Now, I was discussing that lately with somebody from Microsoft, and he said, yeah, it's really to confuse the enemy. And I thought, am I the enemy? But it's really about, in the future, you'll see that App Fabric in the cloud and App Fabric in IIS is going to be the same thing. So that's probably why they have the same name. That's what I think, okay? I don't give any special info from Microsoft about that. It's just what I think. So what we're going to do is we're going to build a service like that, and we're going to add persistence, monitoring, and stuff. And that's live. Well, let's do that. Let's simply do something with Visual Studio. I've put my font nice and big, and I think even the last row can read that. Everybody can read my menu bar? Perfect or bad? No, I think I heard perfect. Okay. So let's just create a new project with Workflow 4. So I'm using Visual Studio 2010 release candidate. And by the way, if you still want to build the old workflow, you can. If you take Workflow 3.5 here, you still get the old templates for Workflow 3.5. But of course, I want to have Workflow 4 now. So one of the templates you get is this one, the WCF Workflow Service Application. If you do that, I'm going to build a little game here. I'm going to call that a number guessing game, NGG or something. And hit OK. What you see is you get a service. A service? Peter, what are you talking about? I don't see a .svc file. So one of the things they did is to add a new kind of service, XAMLX, which really means I'm a WCF service, but I've been built with XAML, not with Colder. So that changes a couple of things. What you'll also find is web.config. And if I double-click on this one, you'll find the usual configuration stuff you would expect in WCF kind of services, like a service model with behaviors and so on and so on. Okay. If you find that there's stuff missing there and you don't know why, come to my session tomorrow on the WCF 4. Okay. So what I get here is a designer. And I get a toolbox. And with this thing, I can now start dragging and dropping stuff on top of this and build something declaratively. So behind my back, this is really using XAML. And I'll show you in a moment. Now, what I want to do is I really want to build a service. I'm going to delete this, and I'm actually going to use the flowchart. Come on, flowchart. You have to actually drag it on top of this bit. And then you get this thing. So flowchart starts at the top and ends somewhere later. So what I can now do is I can quite easily build a little service and drag a receive on here. This is really the receive activity. So this is really an activity saying, I'm going to be waiting for a message to arrive. Now, in WCF, you always hear the four things about services. One of the things is thou shalt have a contract. So if I want to use this, what I also need to do is in here is I need to define a couple of things. I need to define, for example, that this receive is actually going to be a service operation. So I need to give it an operation game, name here. So I'm going to try to, let's call that new game. Okay. It will also ask me about a service contract name. Now, I said no Colder. So what they normally do here is you can just type in the name of a contract. The name of a contract, which is actually some namespace. Let's take utu.be, for example. And then I, for example, add here iGame. Now, what will happen is because this is declarative, there's no code in here, WCF will actually generate for me a service contract called iGame with the namespace www.utu.be and with an operation called newGame. Okay. Now, of course, an operation has to have some input. So what I can now do is I can define content, and I can just click here. And what I need to do here is I need to add an expression. And now, anybody here, C#? One of the funny things is in Workflow 4 is when you type in stuff, expressions, they expect you to type it in VB. Basically, it means you should do what you always do, forget the semicolon. That's about the difference. Now, Microsoft did say that in the future, they're going to allow you to type in C# here as well. But if you think about it, Why did they pick VB and not C#? VB is, of course, more English-like. So if you have a workflow and you've built it and you show it to somebody who's a non-developer, looking at these things is going to be probably make more sense to non-developers in VB than in C#. That's, again, why I think they took VB here. So I need to type in an expression here, and that's where the request is going to be entered in. So now what I need to do is I need to have a variable. Now, in workflow 3, we'd actually have to then start writing code. What I can do here is if I click on this scope, I can add a variable. So I can just type in any variable I want here. So I can say, hey, I would like to have a little variable here. I'm going to call that player. Let's call it player. I'm going to give that the type of string. And then you can actually scope it, so you can give it a slightly smaller scope. And if you want, you can also initialize it here. But I'm not going to initialize it because I'm going to be receiving it anyway. So what I'm going to say here is, in this receive, I want you to have an operation, new game, and I want you to get the expression player. And I can change this to tell it that it's really a kind of string. Now, it doesn't induce that. It does not deduct that automatically. So you can simply say, I have a player, and then the XSD, the schema, would say, well, player is something. By saying here string, I'm actually saying the XSD, this should be a string. By the way, if I want to do more complex things, I can also add these parameters and then add multiple parameters. Okay, so that's a bit one. So I'm really saying here, I want you to give me a service. I'm going to connect this, saying start, this is the first thing you should do, and then wait for an operation called new game, and then wait for a player name. By the way, if I do that, I have to be a little bit careful. I also should set this one, can create instance, to checked. What it actually means is, WCF, if you receive a request with this service contract, iGame, and this operation, new game, well, start for me a new instance of this workflow. And later I can have other receives which will simply continue with the current instance. Okay. Next thing. What I want to do here is, well, let's go on to the next bit. I want to send a response. I want to say, hey, I created a new game. Now, to do that, I'm going to cheat a little bit. I am going to add a little data contract to my project. In real life, you wouldn't do that. You would make it part of another assembly. Data contracts is stuff that doesn't version as often as business logic. So you will want to make that into a separate assembly and then just deploy that on the server, and then you can update your workflows all using the same data contract. But to save a little bit of time, I'm just going to add it here. So I'm just going to add a new class, which is going to be a real caller class. Let's call that game data. And this is going to be my data contract. Whoops, it didn't add a... No worry. It didn't add any caller. So I'm just going to add reference here. Funny thing is, I need to add reference here to system. And see this cool feature? Because I have so many assemblies on my system, this is in download in the background, so sometimes it starts to scroll for some reason. Quite annoying, but... So I really need to have a reference to system runtime serialization. Okay, so let's build my data contract. Let me show off my typing skills. So I'm going to have a game data. And this is really going to have simply a property, which is going to be the player name. And I'm going to have a property here, which is going to be a message. Oops. Okay. On top of this, I'm going to add the data contract attribute. And by the way, it doesn't turn blue. Actually, if you watch this thing again, you see the little blue rectangle? Now, I think I hear some people say, oh, now he's going to do that again. There's a very easy way to make it add the using in your caller. Now, I know some people do Alt-Shift-F10, and I think it's so horrific that you would be doing that. There's a way easier way to do that. What you do is you do Control, and then the key with the dot on, depending if you have a QWERTY or an AZERTY keyboard, that can be different. So if you do that, then it adds the using. But this is actually also a warning. If you're going to do that in Visual Studio 2010, if the namespace, if the class you're typing in does not exist, let's say you have a little typo, let's make that a data contract. If I do that again, it will actually generate a class for you. It's kind of dangerous, because in 2008, you can just do control dot enter, and it will add a using. In 2010, you can do control dot enter, it will add the using, or it will generate for you the class if you have a typo. To be honest, I don't like that. So let's do that here again, control dot enter, I have a using system.runtime serialization, and I want to make this the data member. Let's make my screen smaller again. So data, what's going on? Okay, copy, paste. Did I break something? No, it's just too dark in here. Okay, so that's one data contract, and I'm going to add another one. Let's call that game guess. And this is actually going to be a guess for a certain player. So I'm actually going to copy paste this. And then I'm also going to have a little data member, which is going to be a guess. It's quite dark here. Okay, so this is actually going to be the data that's going to be traveling back and forth between my service and my client. So what I want to do here is, after I have the receive, I want to send them back a little response. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create here a variable which is going to contain my response, let's say the game info, and I'm going to make that of a certain type. And now you can choose here between the most common types, but you can also simply browse for your own types. They also have added support for generics, so you can do that one too. So what I'm going to do here is look for my type, and I can't find it. Then I probably need to build again. Come on, give me my variable scoped here. There it is. So I want to use, let's take game data. Oh yeah, I forgot to add a namespace declaration, but, and I hope this is not going to mess up my demo. Okay, so I want to have a game data here, and I want to return that to the current user. Yeah, if you're fed up with typing long stuff here, you can also add your own imports. So if you have a lot of assemblies with long namespaces, you can just add your imports here. You can save a little bit of time. And I really want to send back a response. Now, first thing we're going to do is I'm going to create my send reply. Come on. Which is really the reply to this receive. So I'm going to receive something. I'm going to send them back a reply, which is actually going to be the game data. So I can just type in here. Game data, game info of type game data. That's going to be the response. And I now need to build the response. Now, when I saw this first time, I was thinking, what did they do here? What I can actually use is I can use an assign activity to actually assign to variable stuff. So I really get declarative programming here, really programming stuff. And I can just connect these things together. That's an important thing to do. So what I want to do here is to assign to game info a little message. I've assigned here the player name, and I'm going to take the player, which I have. And here I'm going to have the game info. Yeah, this is real fun with big fonts. But as you can see, you get full IntelliSense, so I can use that one. So I'm going to take the message. And I'm going to just type in here a little message. Now, this is a VB expression again. So any kind of VB you've ever typed, you can type that again. So I can say player dot guess a number between 0 and 100. Okay. Hopefully the red dots are going to go away. If not, I can always go here to my property view, click on this thing. So assign to my message stuff. Game info is not declared. It's here. Yeah, that's the designer. It builds. I'm just going to keep it like that. So sometimes you get these fake error messages, which is probably still a release, which is hopefully still a release bug, release candidate bug. I'm going to move this stuff a little bit down here, so it's a little bit more readable. But you can see the flow. So I'm going to receive a message. I'm going to assign to this variable some stuff and then send that back. Oh, yeah, I know what I forgot. I have game info here, but it's actually telling me, wait, Peter, you haven't assigned to this an object. So what I'm going to do here is to add a new game data instance. And now hopefully all my errors will go away again. We'll see. So I've built my simple service. I'm going to do the next thing. I'm going to hit F5. Actually, Visual Studio 2010 works a little bit like 2008. If you build a service, it will host it for you. And it will actually start for you a test client if you want to test your service. So what I can now do is I can just click on this. And as you can see, and unfortunately, this tool does not allow you to increase the font in any way. So I need to use my Zoomit. This is actually saying there's a service here listening at this address. With this interface, iGame, using basic HTTP, that's default. And then you have the new game operation. If you want to, you can double-click this and execute that method. So let's take that. Anybody's name here? Come on. Bobby? I think I heard Bobby. Oh, my God. So I'm going to hit invoke. And with some luck, fingers crossed, it says, Bobby, guess a number between 0 and 100. This is your basic Hello World service. Of course, I'm not going to stop with this. I'm going to make this a little bit more interesting by turning this into a number guessing game. So after Bob has done that, I'm actually going to add a little bit more stuff here. I'm actually going to wait for a second request. So after the request, after calling new game, I'm going to ask people to say, call guess, until you've guessed it. So what I can do now is I can go back to the toolbox and drag another receive here, and then connect this stuff together again, connect the dots. And in this receive, I'm going to, configure it a little bit like before. So I'm going to say, I would like you to use for this receive my service contract name following the namespace. Okay, iGame. What would happen if I were to type in, if I had a typo here, if I'm going to run my service, I'll suddenly see two service contracts. Okay, so you can do that if you want to. And I'm going to have a little guess method here. Guess. So once I get this, I'm going to wait here for a guess, and that guess is going to be of a certain type, so I'm going to create a variable here, guess, and let's make that of type. Come on, game guess. And I'm not going to assign it because the receive will actually fill that in for me. So in the receive, I'm going to say, I want you to wait here for a game guess, a guess, which is of type guess, of course. Hit OK. Now, what I also need, of course, is a random number. So I'm going to create here a little variable, say the number. I'm going to make that of type string, of type integer, and I'm going to assign that here a new expression. So this is going to be a I want to have a random number, so I'm going to new a new random object, and then just call next with 0 and 100. Voila, that's it. So what will happen when this workflow starts? It will initialize for me a new number automatically. It will create a game info. It will create all the other stuff. It's going to wait for a name. It's going to send back a little response. And then it's going to wait for a guess. And then next thing, what I need to do is I need to add a little flow here. Did they guess or didn't they? So I'm going to make this a little bit bigger. Again, workflow 4 is an ideal excuse to ask your boss for a big screen. And I'm going to put a little decision here saying, did they guess or didn't they? In the properties, I can then fill out a couple of things. I can actually give a label here, whether they guessed it. So I'm going to call that guessed it. And I'm going to call that wrong guess. And I can then put an expression here, which is really, watch out, VB. So I'm going to say, if guess dot the guess, which is an integer, if that is equal to the number, then I know I've guessed it. Of course, I'm I'm also a C# developer, so I tend to type in double equal. Guess what happens then? Compile errors. So let's do that. So if that happens, I'm going to make this, send back a reply. So I'm going to actually click on the receive and right click here, say create for me, send reply. And well, what happens then when you create this? It actually gets associated with the request. So here you see this is a link to the request. So the send reply to receive will do the request here. Okay. By the way, at that moment in time, you might want to think about some better naming conventions. So here, I'm actually going to call that, new game. And you'll see a little bit later why. So this is going to be new game started. And then here I'm going to wait for a guess. Let's call that player guesses. And then here the player guessed it right. And again, I'm going to decide. What's it saying? Oops. Can see it tries to find a nice path around all the rest, so you get a nice looking thing. This one it got wrong. I can move that about. With some luck, it will drop it here. Okay, that's better. So, and then finally, if it's too small, I'm going to send them back a little message. I'm actually going to tell them a little string here, telling them, well, too small, try bigger. Voila, whoops. Yeah, you don't want to press enter here. Just hit OK. By the way, if they guess it right, I forgot this one. I want to send them also a string saying, got it. And then finally, in the other case, if they did that wrong, it's complaining here again about something. What's it saying? Whoops, the argument type. Didn't I make this string? Yeah, message type. I forgot my quotes. Yeah, once more here. That would be a cool variable name. And then finally, once more. So let's create another send reply. Put that one here. So this one I'm going to name too small. And this one is going to be too big. So let's change that. Let's put that over here. Come on. Not again. Okay. And then finally, when we're done with this, I'm going to connect it back to here so they can have another guess. Voila. And then now not forget my quotes. So in this case, it's too big. Try smaller. Okay. I just built a fairly simple workflow service. Again, now you might be thinking, okay, but well, in a moment, I'm actually going to deploy that and then run it, and then you'll be able to see that I can actually play multiple games on the same machine, games simultaneously. That's another power of workflow. Workflow can easily parallelize stuff for you because it can just look at the activities and say, hey, I can actually do these things together at the same time. Okay, let's hit run and see what I got. So it's going to start. getting the metadata. I can create a new game here. Let's try Bobby again. Invoke. And then let's guess that. And what you see now is in this tool, I need to enter a new object. Now, I'll show you in a moment. So if you do this, you can actually select here your type. This tool is smart enough to deduce the type. So I'm actually going to say here the name is Bobby. Let's take a number. A number? Huh? 66, okay. Yeah, I didn't do any error handling, so if somebody gives me 9,999, that's going to probably horribly crash, we'll see, but I can just invoke it. Now, it also crashes. What is happening? Well, what I did is I started a new game. So workflow says, okay, I'll start for you a new workflow instance, one for Bobby. Now, the next thing I want to do is I want to say, Bobby wants to guess his number. Now, the workflow instance contains the random number which was generated, but workflow actually has no idea on how to connect these two things together. Now, in workflow 3, they solve that in a kind of special way. In workflow 3, what you would do is you would actually have your client, and the client would start the workflow. And the workflow will actually pass back to you a magic number, the instance ID. Anybody ever use that? Using the infamous context binding? It actually meant you got this weird little number, and you would have to keep track of that weird little number so you could actually talk back to the right workflow. So what would happen is a workflow would start, and it would have some kind of key, and it would save that in the database. And then in the next request, by the way, in the response, you would actually get back that key, and then in the next request, you would have to send it back that same magic number. Now, that actually works, but it's really message correlation. What you really want to have is content-based correlation. You just want to say, well, all my messages are going to have a player name, Bobby. And if the player name is Bobby, then it's Bobby's game. And if it's Jan, then it's Jan's game. And if it's Sarah, then it's Sarah's game. So in workflow 4, what we can do here is we can actually make that a lot easier. Our client can just give them something which makes sense to the client, no magic numbers. And I can use any binding. I don't need to use any special binding. What happens then is that workflow will save this, and it will do the mapping for me from Bobby to some workflow thingy. In the database. By the way, while it's doing that, it will probably also save everything in the database. So the next time I do stuff, I just call my service again, sending back Bobby, and then workflow uses that to figure out which workflow to load, and just loads it and then saves it back to disk, and so on, and so on. So this makes life a lot easier. The only thing we must do is to explain to workflow that this field, or these fields, are what you want to use for correlation. And that's actually fairly easy. How would you do that in regular code? In regular code, you would receive something, you would store it in a variable, and then if you see a new request coming in, you would see, is this variable equal to part of the message? Oh, no. Then it's not for me. Then I'll just ignore it. Or if it matches, you would take that. Yeah? Anybody who's ever been doing BizTalk will know you have something called correlation in BizTalk, which also requires you to have something called a correlation set. Now, in workflow, this is really called a correlation handle. So what I need to do is I need to create a special variable called a correlation handle and then say the message that I'm getting needs to have this field. The message I'm sending needs to be correlated to somebody who... it's typically in the send-receive scenario. You send out the bill, and then you get a payment from the bank. Now, I send you the bill, but I get a payment from the bank. How do I know it's your bill that you paid? Of course, you have the reference number. It's the same thing. When I send you a bill, you send me a payment with that reference number, and I can just match them up. Same thing. So I can do that here. Let's try that one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go, and if you look in my list of variables, one of the things you'll see is you automatically get this handle here. By the way, you get a second one, but I'm going to ignore that. You get this handle, which is really of type correlation handle. So what I can do here is I can give this a slightly better name. Come on, if Visual Studio wants to react to it. Okay, I'll just keep it as handle. What I'm going to say is, when I send out the game info, when I create a new game, I'm going to go here for my properties, and I'm going to tell it that this one will initialize that first handle. So I'm going to use this correlation initializer. Oh, it's still running, that's why. So I'm going to initialize my handle, and I'm going to say I would like to use handle one, and I would like to query correlate this. I want to correlate this using a query. I want you to look inside my message for example, and then here I can click on this thing, come on, and can say, I want you to actually remember the player name I'm sending out here, Bobby. So what you get here then is an XPath expression into your message. And then what I can then say is when the player guesses, so when I get back another request, I can say that this is going to correlate on, and I'm going to use handle here again, handle one. Come on. And I'm going to tell it that in the message I will be receiving, that they need to look for the player name. It's actually the contents of the variable that counts, not the name of the variable. So it's actually going to then correlate one to the other. Okay. Let's see if I get any other warnings here. Let's build this. Let's try to run it. F5. So with some luck, I can play another game of Bobby. I hope that doesn't have another meaning. Okay, so I can create a new game here. Let's take Bobby. Invoke. So I'm starting a new workflow instance now, and which is using Bobby, and I can now send him a guess, and again using this thing here and then filling in a new guess. Name is Bobby, and then the guess was 66, and then hit invoke. And it says, yeah, sorry, too small, try bigger. Now to save a little bit of time, I'm going to do this, let's take 84, something like this. Too small, 92. Ooh, 96, 98, or I have a bug, that could also be it. Or I'm really getting 100 here. I think I have a bug. No, sorry, I have to be smaller. Okay, I've been doing this way too much. So 77 is too small, I had like 82, so let's try 80 again. No, that's too... Am I so stupid? Thank you. Okay, so you saw I can now play this game. Now, I can just play one game, but at least I can play one game. By the way, as long as I'm running this in IIS, I can play multiple games if I want. So I can actually go here, create a new game for Bobby. Create a new game for Jan. So I'm going to play two games at the same time now. So I'm going to guess here for Bobby, and let's try with 50 again. Too big. And I'm going to add a second guess here for Jan. Come on, second guess. Jan. And let's try 50 here as well. With some luck, I have 1 in 2 chance of these being different. This one says too big, and this one also says too big. Oh, damn it. Let's try this 125, but you'll see that I can play multiple games now, so this is still too big. Let's try for this 25. I hope it's too small. No. 12 again. Okay, 16, something like this. And then again here, but as you can see, I can play multiple games, each with their own state at the same time. The only problem is, if now IIS is going to crash, I'll be in a lot of trouble. So let's go on to the next bit. I'm actually going to stop the whole thing here. And I'm actually going to now deploy this in a better environment. By the way, if you want to deploy that in Visual Studio 2010, you can actually now build a very easy deployment package, which is really a zip. And I just want to show you these settings. Anybody here already looked at this stuff? The new deployment? Yeah. So with this kind of deployment system, I can build a zip file which contains my whole application, and even if I want to, even my databases. So here you can configure this stuff. You can package your web application. You can package your databases here. And then it can ask you to publish it as some kind of zip. So these are, I'm just going to take the default values here, and I'm going to ask it to build for me that deployment package. Okay. Now I'm going to go to IIS, and in IIS I've installed something called AppFabric, which should, with some luck, make it easier for me to deploy my application. So I have this special site here, TechDays, and I'm going to right-click on this, and I'm going to ask it to deploy for me my, I wanted to import my application. So I'm going to browse here to my zip file, and with a little bit of luck, go to projects, it's here somewhere, in my objects debug package file, I can find a zip. So I'm going to open it up, and I'm just going to deploy it. I'm just going to hit next, next again, and I'm just going to call that NGG, hit next again. It says, yeah, sorry, needs .NET 4, yes, do that, and then it just installs it. So once I get this, I now have my number guessing game again here, and I can just start to play with this one. Now, what is different? Well, to be honest, I am using AppFabric now, and it's a way nicer environment to deploy your services in. Of course, I could build my own host, but the problem is if I build my own host, what about monitoring? What about tracking? What about persistence? I will have to create the databases myself. I will have to edit the configuration file myself, which is no fun because it's XML. So with AppFabric, I can just say, there's a database, do everything for me. And by default, it does that. So if it finds a workflow or a WCF service deployed in a .NET 4 application pool, it will by default give you those things. So it's a lot less work. So what do I get with this? Well, this, of course, is a special extension for IIS, for WCF, and for workflow, running on .NET 4. And I'll get a whole bunch of other stuff along with that, stuff like persistence and monitoring. Save my stuff, what happened. And I can also get other stuff like caching. So they also added to that something called Project Velocity, which makes it also easier to add special caching and so on. But I don't want to talk about that. I just want to show you a little bit more about AppFabric. Okay, now what I'm going to do here is I've deployed this application, but if I have AppFabric on my machine, I will not only get this special deploy menu, but I will also get this thing here where I can then configure my service, and I can also start and stop my service. So I'm going to configure it a little bit, and I get this very easy dialogue. So I can say, for example, hey, deploy it on this site and so on. Would you like to have monitoring? Well, yes, please. So what I can do here is I can ask it, each time it executes an activity, and remember I was renaming my activities, each time it's going to execute an activity, it's going to write to the database an entry saying, this happened in this activity. So if I choose my names right, reading that log is going to be easier as well. And here you can actually change how much it should log. Nothing. Like just for, well, normal health monitoring, everything. So I can change all of these levels here. Actually, what this does, it changes the config file from .NET, but okay. If you want to, you can also configure here the old-fashioned WCF logging, the logging files. I'm not going to enable that because it's going to do most of the stuff here anyway. I can then also enable persistence, and I can, for example, tell it to persist all my entries. What I'm going to do in a moment is I'm going to start the game, and I'm then going to restart IIS. If you do that on a normal service, it loses everything. In my case, it will actually be able to, after IIS has completely restarted, I'll be able to replay my, to continue playing my game, which is kind of cool. Now, what I don't want is I don't want it to keep instances. You can also ask it to keep instances, but then Bobby can only play one game, because after playing the first game, it's still going to be in the database, and then when you come back with Bobby, with that key, the system's going to say, Bobby's done. So you might want to enable this. And you can do a whole bunch of other stuff like how to handle errors and so on, but I'm just going to keep that. I can also, for example, enable that my instances will always save themselves. And I can also enable it that I can start and stop my services. What's also cool here is I can make my services automatically start. That's a new IIS 7.5 feature, but this is also now possible for workflow. So instead of when I hit the workflow the first time, IIS needing to compile and do all that work for the first request, it will already be done if I enable this. And then I have the usual throttling and other stuff I can change here, but let's just go for OK. Now I need to double check one other thing. I kind of screwed up my application pools on my machine. So I'm actually going to use this one. I know this one is safe. It has something to do with installing with Visual Studio 2010, beta 1, then beta 2, then release candidate, and somehow IIS got confused, and now it's trying to load the wrong version of .NET. So I'm going to take this one. Okay. What I also need to do here is typically change here that it supports HTTP, but also NetPipe binding. Why? The control, the start and stop of workflows, uses actually NetPipe binding. Because it's on the same machine anyway. So let's try that one. Hit OK. So let's see if I had success. I'm going to use the browser to get its address. Oops. What's going on? Did I not start my server? Ah, that explains a lot. Come on, give me my stuff. Ah, okay, perfect. I have something. So I'm just going to take this address and use my little tool here again to start little game. And I'm just going to tell it to start a new game for, well, let's say myself. And then I'm going to have a guess here. Let's create my record again. And let's take 50. And let's just hit it. Okay. So this one says, too big, try smaller. Now, let's do something else here. First thing I want to show you, if I go back to this site, or even like the site or even the web application, I get this new stuff here. Now, you see this? This is the AppFabric dashboard, which will allow me to look at all the services which are running on my site here or whatever level I have. I can use this to configure endpoints, so now I can just configure the WCF endpoint from within IIS. Maybe you like typing in the XML, or maybe use the built-in WCF config editor, but now we can use this one too to do the same thing, and also for services. So if you click on this thing, for example, you will see all the endpoints for this service. So these are XAMLX, I have the basic HTTP and the net named pipe binding endpoints. If I go back to the dashboard, come on. I can also see here for the moment that currently, let's zoom in again, that I have like a workflow. I have like a couple of workflows here that were already completed, but these are from others. Come on. If I look here, this is service1.xamlx, and I can then look at details, what happened. And then it will show me that this service is running. And if I want to, I can then look at, for example, the events that have happened and then see exactly where my service is. Don't worry about this. This is a beta bug. So this has nothing to do with my demo. This will always appear. But in here, I can actually see all the steps that were taken in this workflow. So create a new game, assign some stuff, assign some more stuff, tell it that the game has started, the player is guessing, and so on and so on. So I can log stuff in here, and I can also write some special code to log my own stuff in there. But normally I don't need to do that. I can actually turn this on and off at will. So that's also cool. And now for the final thing, IIS reset. Let's see if my service will actually survive this. To be honest, last time I did this, in the beginning my demo didn't work. Well, IIS hadn't restarted yet. So I have to be a little bit patient here. So IIS, let's go back here. Let's see if I can refresh everything and see if I get stuff running for the moment. I'm just going to hit it first with AppFabric. And then hopefully If I'm now going to guess again, so it says it's too big, let's try 25 now. It still continues, which is kind of cool. Don't forget, this service is really running in IIS. I killed IIS, I restarted IIS, and my service simply won't quit, which I think is pretty cool. Okay, to be honest, that's the last bit of my session. I promise you not to be too long, so I have like 9 minutes to spare. Anybody have a question? Yes? So the question is, can I show you what's inside the database? Yes, the database is really the SQL Server database. So if I go here for... where's the... Okay, let's just go here in SQL Server. Let's go to Management Studio. Well, the answer is really yes. If I go in here, I just look up the database. Maybe while this is loading, anybody else another question? Yes? Could you speak up a little bit? Is there a way to know which state the service is? But if it's a workflow service, I can actually see the activity it is in, but on the dashboard, you can actually see whether the service is still running, if it's idle, or if it's been paused for some reason, or it has been killed, or there was an error. You can actually see that in the dashboard. Sorry? From a client perspective, well, what you could, of course, do is write some code to query that yourself, and there is... workflow adds to that, so there are special libraries to make it easier to read out the logging databases and so on to look at those things yourself. Let's try to connect while... Any other questions? Just shout or... Nobody? Okay, let's have a quick look here. So when App Fabric installs, and I've installed Beta 2, and you have to be very careful, I'm going to warn you, if you install App Fabric, make sure it's the one for Visual Studio, the right version. So what you see is when Visual Studio 2010 goes RTM in 2 weeks, shortly after that, I hope we'll see a new version of App Fabric that will work perfectly together with, well, the RTM version. But it will probably not be the final release. It will still be some beta. So if I look here, I can find, for example, here the persistence database and the monitoring database, and you can find tables. And in here, you can, for example, find your instances. So if I look at the instances table, come on. Let's take these 200. I hope there's still something in there. There should be something in there. And here you can see the instances with their separate columns here. So you can find the instance ID, the data, the persisted data. The persistent data is actually XML, but it gets zipped by default, so you can change that. So you can find all kind of columns in here which are interesting or maybe less interesting. Problem is, these tables are still in flux. So when .NET 4 goes RTM, then I would start to trust these tables because workflow actually uses a built-in component to write to these tables. But if you want to write to Oracle, you can do that too. So if you want to make workflow or WCF write stuff to Oracle, what you need to do is you need to build your own little provider class that saves stuff to, well, another database. So you can replace that if you want. Other questions? I hope that answered your question. But the thing is, by default, it zips stuff, so we'll have to unzip it too and stuff. But this is really XML. Okay? If that's all, then I wish you a pleasant evening. and then maybe you'll be back tomorrow. Okay, thank you.